Here in Orlando, Florida, O-Town Compost is leading the composting revolution, recycling organic waste into a nutrient-rich resource. Join Charlie Pioli, founder of O-Town Compost, as we hear from the nation's leading voices behind the grassroots community composting movement. Welcome to the Community Composting Podcast.
Please rate and review on whichever podcast platform you're listening to. If you feel like this is good content and you're learning a lot about composting.
Hi, welcome to episode number 25 of the Community Composting Podcast. This is Charlie, and today I'm interviewing one of the longtime community composters, Tim Bennett with Bennett Compost. They're one of the community composters in Philadelphia. And Tim, you've been at it for close to a decade now, and you've really kind of set the trend for what every community composter is striving for, like Gwen Nolan of Mother Compost that I interviewed a couple episodes ago. But yeah, tell me like about your background story, how, you know, close to a decade ago, you really found yourself swapping buckets and diverting food waste.
Yeah, so it's thanks for having me on, and it certainly is an honor, and we're excited for the conversation, and you know, part of a network of community composters here in Philadelphia who are all doing good work, and we're all part of a network of people across the country. So we're happy to be a part of that, and happy to help out our fellow composters with whatever wisdom we may or may not have. We've been doing composting since 2009. And it all started because I was living in a second floor apartment in Philadelphia and was thinking about my own impact and my own footprint, and you know, wanting to be able to compost and not having a good way at the time that I had figured out how to do it. Now, had I been a better researcher, or maybe just known more about what I know now, I might have just built a worm bin for myself and done composting that way, and none of this last 12 years would have ever happened. But luckily for me, I didn't do that, and instead I had this idea that maybe there are other people out there like me in Philadelphia, which is a, you know, large and very dense city where people don't have a lot of yard space and they don't have a lot of outside space in large parts of the city. So putting a compost bin in your backyard is not necessarily an option. And so I had this idea that maybe there are other people like me that wanted to compost and would be willing to pay a little bit for it. And I talked to some friends and talked to some people, and I kind of got a generic, like, yeah, I'd be into that. You know, kind of the thing that friends say to you when they think that maybe your idea is a little crazy. But so I put $100 in a bank account and said, I'm going to try to see if I can start a business here, and probably nothing will come of it. But, you know, I'd spent $100 of my life on dumber stuff than that, so it wouldn't be a huge financial hit. And I'd probably waste a lot of time and it wouldn't go anywhere, but I'd learn stuff hopefully. And I kind of had been interested for a while in having a business and being an entrepreneur, but doing something that also had a value, not just as like a monetary way, but a way to kind of have an impact in the world. And so this kind of seemed like a good way to get my feet wet and fail, not even spectacularly, but fail a little bit and learn a little bit and set myself up for the next thing. And 12 years later, I'm still doing it. So it's been a pretty cool ride.
And not only are you doing it, I know I read somewhere that you guys have like over 5,000 accounts. What are your residential, commercial numbers, just to give a reference and something we can all strive for as, you know, community composters that may have just started a couple of years ago?
No, that's a great question. And we have currently close almost 5,700 residential households that we collect from, and then about 75 commercial customers that we pick up from. And the commercial number is actually pre-COVID, that number was over 100. And obviously with the shutdown of many things, especially food related and restaurants, that number took a big hit, but it's recovered pretty well over the last, 6 months, 6 to 9 months. So it's things are going in the right direction on that front.
So you guys are mostly focused on residential, or would you say it doesn't matter? Or do you guys collect from like big generators, like restaurants and universities and stuff, cafeterias?
Yeah, so we are mostly focused on residential. That is the core of what we do and what we started with. As you can see by the number of customers, that's where the bulk of our time and our energy goes. We do most of the commercial people we work with are on the smaller end. So we're not doing a lot of work with like hospitals or universities or people like that, but we are working with kind of neighborhood restaurants and cafes and kind of those kind of people right now in terms of on our commercial side.
Yeah. And to go back to my podcast with Gwen Nolan of Mother Compost, she said that Tim Bennett one time told me that residential is where it's at, and that's where the real like margin, the profit margin is, because you're doing a relatively a smaller volume. But if you're able to put together a dense enough route, which I'm jealous of your urban setting there in Philadelphia, I'm kind of in the sprawl of Orlando. Why did you say that? And why do you, why has residential been the core of the business?
Well, some of it is because, when we were first starting out, I didn't even own a vehicle when I started the business. And so I actually, when I first started, would rent, they had this thing called Philly Car Share at the time here in Philadelphia, and you could rent pickup trucks by the hour. And I would rent them at the night rate, they called the Insomniac rate, which started at 10 p.m. And they were $1.50 an hour at that point.
Oh, wow.
Some of it was just by like the nature of the equipment and the space that we have, right? Because commercial people tend to have a lot more material, and you just need to have bigger ways, vehicles to collect them, and bigger machinery if you're doing your own processing, bigger machinery on the back end to haul it, unless you're dealing with very smaller commercial customers. Whereas with residential, even though they are tend to be kind of small dollar accounts, if you can build that density and you can build that up, you can do a lot of stops in a relatively small amount of time. I mean, our routes these days are probably our least dense routes. We're doing, 25 to 30 stops an hour. And some of our more dense routes, we're doing 45 to 50 stops an hour.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Serving the multifamily, the apartments and condos, that doesn't act as an inhibitor and slow down your, stops per hour.
So some of it's like for us, Philadelphia, there's a lot of what are called row homes. So they're houses that are literally attached to each other, but they're individual houses with individual doors. And so you could go down a street and there might be 50 houses on a block, right? Like we're talking about a very kind of dense, some of it's unique to our urban environment where we happen to operate, is this like incredible density that we have. And we don't do a ton of we have bigger multi unit buildings, right? Like, 80, 100 unit apartment buildings. And we haven't done a lot of that stuff in the past. We are starting to get more into that kind of apartment and that kind of unit. But that's it requires a little bit different of a model for us to do. So we're figuring that out as we're going. But the core of our business is the Philadelphia row home, which is yeah, relatively small and relatively compact and shares two walls with its neighbor. So it's very close.
No, that's ideal. Yeah, I find myself here in Orlando really liking the commercial side of the business, even though it is more volume, just more equipment, more time. And, you know, our drivers, we wake up very early in the morning to start commercial routes, similar to like the trash hauling companies, because there's no traffic on the road and you don't want to be like emptying someone's bin when the restaurant is open, you know, alongside the restaurant. So, yeah, it's just complete different, you know, kind of demographics we're talking about here. And I hope our listeners, you know, really understand their demographics before, you know, just plunging in for, you know, some hydraulic equipment when they could maybe do it by bike. And that's another thing I thought was very cool about Bennett Compost. You guys are actually doing a fossil-free collection service. You have bike routes and bicyclists who are doing those routes who must have huge calf muscles. But how do you do that? Like, how many stops are on those routes? How are you able to put that in the back of the bike? What type of bike is it? What type of trailer? Are you able to throw any like small commercial routes in there? And I did see on your website, you don't swap buckets, you empty and clean there at the site. So,
yeah. So we do probably about 40%, 35 to 40% of our total stops we do via e-bike. So it's not just, it does have a little bit of electric assist, which doesn't make it any less impressive, the stuff that the cyclists do, but does give a little bit more context to how they can do what they do. And cause that assist helps when they're carrying around a few hundred pounds of material on a trailer. But we're using an e-bike called a Turn, and it's with a trailer that we're towing a trailer behind it. And the trailer is a dual axle trailer from Bikes at Work. And it can, you know, we are, you know, because we're not swapping, we're emptying, and we'll put kind of we'll put like six or seven totes on the back of that trailer. And then we're dumping into those.
And by totes, you mean like 20 gallon tubs or something?
Yeah, they're 18 gallon kind of Rubbermaid brute. They call it totes, but like a tub kind of
thing.
And you know, they're probably, the bikers, depending on how heavy the routes, like how full the buckets are, and you know, it's different in November when people have pumpkins and and all their you know, still getting a bunch of fresh fruit from their CSA maybe, than it is in February. But they can probably do between 45 and 70 stops per leg, and they will do, but their total route will be usually between 150 and 200 stops a day. And the way they're able to do that with those legs, that we've developed a network of what we call transfer hubs, and they will go, they'll leave from our bike headquarters, and they will go out to their routes with everything they need for the full route, and they'll drop the stuff for legs two and three, for example, at this transfer hub. And then they will do their, you know, they'll do their route of 45 to 70 stops and then drop that material at the hub and go out and do everything. And then they will compile, all that stuff will just end up at that hub. And then it's picked up, a truck will come by later in the day and get that stuff from the hub. So that allows the bicyclist to focus on what they do best, which is bicycling and doing the collections and navigating. Again, the downside of the density that we have is almost all good, but there are some incredibly small streets that we operate on where you'd be hard pressed to get any kind of car or truck down, but the bicycles can get down there and do the pickups and kind of zoom out of there. So
yeah, that's awesome. I did the math, about 45 stops on a bike route. If our average residential pickup is about 11 pounds. So that's equivalent to about 500 pounds of food waste just in that one bike route. And that makes sense that you have, you know, like a normal trash route, you guys are like making trips to kind of like the transfer station, mm-hmm. To just kind of offload, and you have two or three legs where they can continue on with their route. That's really impressive. Someone told me that you guys were even partnered with like a bike, like a micro hauler that does the bike pickups, or is that Bennett Compost that does the bike pickups?
No, so we do the bike pickups ourselves now. That was originally started through a partnership with my business partner, Jen Mastelers, before she was my business partner. And then she was doing a kind of very neighborhood centric, mostly actually commercial collection in her neighborhood of 18 or 20 commercial stops, all via electronic bicycle and actually electronic tricycle at the time. But she, we joined forces and she became part of here, like she was very insistent that we needed to do pickups via bike, and we needed to do as many as we could, because she saw not just the density of Philadelphia had, but also the flatness that a lot of the parts of the city have. So Philadelphia also, some of that kind of outlining the neighborhoods that are more on the, they're still part of the city, but kind of the outer parts of the city are more hilly, but the central neighborhoods in Philadelphia are very flat. And so she saw that, like, very flat, very dense, like what could be better than doing these pickups via bicycle? And so she pushed that and we started that. And when we hired a full-time guy to do collections via bicycle, he was kind of a unicorn in that he was just perfect for the role. And he really helped to not just.
Yeah. I read about him and how, like, he's the type of guy to do a, you know, 40-hour bike route, you know, per week. And then on the weekend in his free time, he'll go on an 8-hour bike ride for like 100 miles. So
yeah,
I would say that's definitely a unicorn.
him and another guy who work here actually just did like a 200-kilometer bike ride for fun on Saturday.
Crazy.
Yeah.
The only thing I could see wrong with biking in Philly and Boston, other cities, is the cobblestone. Is that a problem at all or not really?
Well, we don't have a lot of cobblestone anymore in Philadelphia. There is a little bit left, and it is the bane of our bikers' existence. They try to avoid that like the plague. Luckily, there aren't too many streets like that, so most of the streets are not cobblestone, so they're in pretty good shape. Cobblestones, the other thing we have that the bikers, it can be challenging for the bikers, are trolley tracks. So we have some trolleys here in Philadelphia, and if you're not paying attention and you get stuck in that trolley track, the wrong way with your wheel, it could be a little dangerous, but they're great, and they know what they're doing, and they make sure they're being safe, and that's that.
Yeah. So 5,700, that's like, 1-3% of the households in Philadelphia, which is really impressive. I mean, that's an incredible amount of food waste being diverted every week. And I know that the city heavily supports you guys, but do you dream of one day reaching more residents? And, you know, because the city of Philadelphia has a zero waste goal by 2030. And how would you reach the more residents? You know, you think of a bell curve, you have all those early adapters, you're into the middle ground, but like on the other tail end of the bell curve, how do you reach those people and get them to start composting?
Yeah, no, that's a great question and something that we're certainly working hard trying to figure out. I mean, I think that there's a lot more potential for composting in Philadelphia, and we want to be a part of making that happen. But I don't think that there's going to be kind of, it's not one solution that will kind of get everyone or as many people as can be composting. And so I think part of our challenge now is while we are continuing to grow our people who are doing our curbside pickup the way we're doing it, how do we reach people who aren't able to do it yet, either because they don't understand why they should, or they don't have the resources to afford a private service, or they live in a situation, they live in a kind of a building that doesn't work, or a situation that doesn't work well for the way our service currently operates. I mean, if you looked at our stops on a map, all these households, there are probably about 45 or so zip codes in Philadelphia. And most of probably 85% of our customers are in 10 of them, right? So there's these very geographic clusters, and there'll be other parts of the city where we just have a couple people here and there. And so the challenge is figuring out, like, is that just doing more outreach in those areas, or is that developing, and I talked a little bit about it earlier, developing a slightly different model that works in bigger apartment buildings, where our model does not work that well because we're not swapping bins for everybody? Or is it community drop-off locations because there are areas where, you know, while we try to keep our service as affordable as we can, and that's part of our mission is to make composting easy, and part of being easy is accessible. There are people who $18 a month, which is what we charge, that to spend that on composting doesn't seem feasible. And so how do we work with partners to do that? Do we have drop-off locations to do that? I mean, how do we reach people so that we are allowing even more people to compost, but we're doing it in a way that allows it to continue to happen and isn't dependent on just volunteer work, or isn't dependent on the generosity of people, but actually build systems and structures in place that outlive kind of any one particular unicorn, like we have with our bicyclists. Like, well, Rudy is still here and he's still helping to drive it. The goal is to make it so that, like, if Rudy decides he wants to do something else, it doesn't fall apart, right? Like, we're building systems and we're building structures, and we're trying to incorporate those things so that we can bring new people on and new people on board. And the same thing, I think, that goes for how we reach the other 98% of households here in Philadelphia, how we get them on board. And that will require being creative and being thinking kind of differently than what we've done so far. But that's part of what keeps it exciting, and part of what keeps it interesting, and part of what keeps it fun for me, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are crushing it relative to most community composters, but there's still a big market out there. But how are you working with the city? Because, you know, they're interests are to create a zero waste city, probably lower the amount of money that they're paying the haulers. Oh yeah, the city of Philadelphia has their own fleet of trucks and they have their own collection division. So, you know, how are you working with the city to expand curbside composting? Because I feel like here in Orlando, you know, that's my kind of vision is, you know, there's all these different things like drop-offs, like, you know, the price of service, all these things, and you got to meet people halfway. But I think our service, our pickup, our curbside service is super convenient. And, you know, I know that buildings can vary with how well it works, but we haven't found a building where we can't you know, swap out their bucket and get it to their door. But the city, I want to make, you know, curbside composting a utility like trash and recycling, and I want the city to work with me to bring it to more people and not make it mandatory not make it universal, like recycling was made. And now look at recycling, it's, you know, bogged down with contamination. But I think that the city and the private sector, like, you know, O-Town, Bennett, should be working together to, you know, really, really bring curbside to more places and meet people halfway and figure out different systems of billing customers, something that's affordable, but, you know, also making it very appealing. So,
yeah. I think that is certainly, certainly part of the equation. I think, like, you know, the next step, once you kind of have built kind of a groundswell of kind of individuals who are interested and are doing it through a private services, is looking at how do you work with however in your community that, you know, the waste is handled, the trash is currently being handled. And, you know, in Philadelphia, the city, the way that it happens is the city collects all the material curbside, the trash, which, and anyone who's putting their food waste is not composting, is putting it in the trash. The city currently is collecting that material in city trucks with city workers, and they are bringing it to private facilities that are run by outside contractors who are then, you know, landfilling it or incinerating it or whatever.
They're paying by the ton. So
yep.
By lightening their load, they would actually be saving money.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So there's some financial incentive for them to do that. What our work with the city has focused on so far here in Philadelphia has not necessarily been on curbside yet, because that is a big, while that is the goal and that's what lots of people want, it's a big undertaking, especially in a large community, depending on how big your community is. And Philadelphia is a very big city. And so a lot of our work has been focusing on kind of building relationships within the city for other composting related projects. So we are currently in a partnership with the city here in Philadelphia, where they are providing us with space to operate out of, and they are providing us with technical assistance in permitting the space to process material and actually helping to develop the first urban permit, composting permit in the state of Pennsylvania. And we are, in exchange for that, providing collections from the rec centers here, the recreation centers. And because the recreation centers in Philadelphia are the second largest provider of food to kids after the schools. And so they generate a lot of material. So we've worked out an arrangement with them to kind of, where they're not paying any money, but they're providing space and kind of staff time to help us with things. And we're able to bring outside material and operate out of that space. So we're able, and they're getting collection from their rec centers and collection and some finished compost back once we start processing in the space. So it's kind of an interesting partnership, because it's not there's no money exchanged, which makes it kind of different than a lot of public-private partnerships, but it's a way to kind of build up our kind of working together and showing the city what's possible and what could be happening there. And another thing that we're doing now is that we're working with the Philadelphia prison system here, which is part of the city, to manage. They actually have composting, that they compost all their food waste and have a compost system and you know, an aerated static pile system that they built a few years ago. And with their staffing challenges that they've faced with COVID, they haven't had the staffing to be able to run it. So it's kind of sat fallow and they haven't been able to do it. So we're actually now partnering with them to help them get that back up and running and get them diverting food waste from there.
Is it on site at the prison?
It's on site at the prison. And so it's we got connected with that. It's a kind of cool program that they're doing. And we have known the woman who kind of spearheads it for a while. And we've actually, she kind of a cool story. She had somebody who she was in the prison and who she got to know through some of the programs that she was involved with. And she said, you know, this guy's a really smart, really good guy. He just needs someone to take a shot on him. And so when he was released, we hired him. He was released on a Monday and he started working for us on a Wednesday, and he's been a rock star employee. And now he is actually spearheading this this initiative and working with them from the other side. So he's kind of gone full circle with this whole journey. And so, you know, I think that, and that there's part of that there that doing is kind of different and out of the box kind of partnerships in the beginning helps to build up your trust and your credibility with both the kind of civil servants who are there and are there for the long time and will help to make things done, and also elected officials who see the good work that you're doing, and it's all part of the longer term plan to try to just do as much composting as we can here in Philadelphia and get as many people composting and involved in the work of it.
As you start to take on more food scraps, you realize very quickly that you need a better composting system to process the material. This is why I highly recommend the aerated static pile micro bin designed and made easy by O2 Compost. In 60 days, I have finished compost without putting in the labor of turning the pile. The piles heat up to over 140 degrees, killing pathogens, weed seeds, and fly larvae, making the end product safe to use in the garden. With 32 plus years of experience in the compost industry, Peter Moon, owner of O2 Compost, is a leading expert in the field of ASP composting. I encourage you to set up a free half an hour consultation with Peter Moon by going to his website, www.o2compost.com. That's the letter O, the number 2, compost.com. If you mention that you heard about O2 Compost on this podcast, you'll receive a 10% discount on the purchase of the Microbin Compost Training Program.
Well, it sounds like the city is on your team, which is awesome. I think after a decade of doing what you're doing, you don't really need to say very much. The numbers speak for themselves. But also that is one of my other questions is, you know, it's such a dense city. It's great for collection, but for processing, besides hauling your material outside the city to be processed, you know, how does Bennett Compost handle the processing? Because I'm assuming you guys do your own processing mostly.
So we do some of, we don't process all of our material ourselves. We have processed, at some points we've processed it all. And at some points we've partnered with other people to help us process it. So, you know, when we were real small, we kind of had this network of community gardens that we worked with, and we managed the compost. We built compost systems at the gardens and we managed them for them in exchange for space. And so that was kind of our initial model when we first started. And then we kind of did some guerrilla composting for a while. We found some people who would let us build kind of larger systems on their space. And as long as we did a really good job of managing them,
You're talking about mostly ASP systems?
Yeah, so now, we got into doing ASP later. Initially, we were doing we started 3 bin systems that we were turning by hand. And then we were doing, we even did some ASP systems for a while that we were turning by hand. And now we're doing ASP systems that we turn with small, some mini skid steers and some full-size skid steers. So it's been a kind of a progression from very small scale community-based systems to larger systems.
Yeah, that's really cool. And, you know, you guys are, how many pounds of food waste compost per week, or do you collect per week?
Yeah, so, you know, we're collecting from 5,700 households, and we're probably, processing close to, 25 or 30 tons a week of material. So
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Now, yeah. And we're not doing that all ourselves anymore, yeah. But we are, you know, this facility that we're working on with the city and working to get permitted, that'll be a facility that can handle 10 tons a week once it's fully up and running. So we'll be running that facility in a fairly dense urban footprint, using ASP and kind of best practices, and really making sure that we're being good neighbors and doing all the things that you need to do, because if you're doing it right, compost shouldn't be a problem. So we want to be a model.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some great urban compost sites. Like, I visited Big Reuse under the Queensboro Bridge, mm-hmm. in New York City, right there in the smack dab of Queens. And then Red Hook composting site in Brooklyn. And then it sounds like what you're doing is incredible. There's that one in Baltimore, like the Baltimore Composting Initiative with Brenda Platt. But that 10 tons a week, that's like over 500 tons a year. That's a great addition to the city's, you know, food waste recycling infrastructure. You know, do you think to achieve zero waste, they're going to need more infrastructure to handle, and what type of infrastructure?
I mean, absolutely, they're going to need more. It's a big city, and this is just a small portion of the food waste. And my belief is that, again, it's not going to be one giant compost site that handles all the stuff. I believe it's going to be a combination of a lot of small and medium sized sites. Yeah, I really believe that is that's the way to do it, and I think that some of that is because I think you want to network that's how you get more people involved, by showing them it's not some crazy thing. It's right there, and kids can see it, and people from the neighborhood can have jobs, and it's built into the infrastructure of what we do. And I also think that here in Philadelphia, we're certainly influenced by the fact that there was a very large compost site that in Wilmington, Delaware, which is only, 25 miles outside the city, and that opened in 2010 to great fanfare, and was permitted to take 500 tons a day of material. And there was a lot of excitement around that. And, for a number of reasons, it was then shut down 4 years later. And that really put a setback on the kind of composting infrastructure, not necessarily for us, but for larger generators who were very excited about it. It left a very foul, kind of a bad taste in people's mouths. And so I think having lots of smaller sites set up builds a kind of more resilient infrastructure, so that if you have one or two that aren't being run correctly or aren't being operated up to standards, they can and should be shut down, but it doesn't impact the entire system.
Right. It's kind of like the difference between centralized and decentralized. Decentralized systems are notoriously more resilient in the face of disaster. And that composting site in Wilmington, me and Brenda Platt just talked about it on our last episode. It was managed by Waste Management, who they did this here in Apopka, Florida, where they take over a facility, a food waste recycling composting facility. They operate for a little while, and then it just, they shut it down. And I don't understand the workings, but it just goes to show, if you're like a municipality, not to lean so heavily on these big waste companies. You want to really support the small decentralized systems for handling and recycling waste. Like Bennett Compost is a perfect example, because you guys are, you're kind of held accountable in that partnership you have with the city. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And even with here, like the solution is not, for curbside, is not for, we're doing 5,000 households, but there are 500,000 households in the city. Right. But the solution is not for us to probably be doing all 500,000 of them. It for them to be, nine other compost companies like us that are out there in the city that are, that are doing this collection. And again, like building this kind of like neighborhood-based kind of density neighborhood-focused, small-scale, decentralized systems, so that the system outlives any one actor within the system. And that's how I think lasting change and systematic change can happen, is by building these structures and not being too reliant on one person or one company or one kind of hero to come in and solve all the problems. It's how do we build kind of bigger, more robust systems.
Yeah, and I feel like the city is the right one to kind of facilitate those bids for different neighborhoods, maybe, and you know, the city can provide a lot of educational resources too. But yeah, that you have a really good perspective of like 10 years down the line of what I'm experiencing here in Orlando, Florida. I always say we're like 10 or 20 years behind the rest of the country. But I guess my closing question is, what advice do you have for fledgling community, starting community composters? And do you think there is an opportunity for a community composter to start in, a neighborhood or an area of a small town or big city where it doesn't seem like there's that much interest from people? Like, they tell an entrepreneur to do like a market assessment before starting your business, but it sounds like you just surveyed your friends who didn't take you that seriously, and then you did it, and now here you are. So
I think it does. I think what I would tell them is that I think that starting small is to your advantage, because it allows you to learn and to get yourself your feet wet and to learn how to do it on a small scale, and just be aware that it's going to take time, and that you got to stay at it and you got to learn. And we've been doing it for 12 years, but the first 5 or 6 were rocky. They were really rocky, and some of that was because I had no idea what I was doing. And I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there who are more knowledgeable and more capable and certainly smarter than I am, but it is especially if you're starting and focusing on small scale residential, it takes time. Like, it takes time to grow the route. It takes time to do it. It takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of, and you kind of have to embrace that. And you kind of have to like build relationships and try to not do everything yourself and figure out how you can find partnerships. Partnerships have been a big part of what has made us successful, initially with community gardens and then with the city now, but like throughout it, we've been very focused on working very hard at what we can do and building relationships outside of what we can do to help facilitate that and help to grow it. And so I think that's a big part of it is just kind of figuring out how you can start it and start small and try not to, you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but just keep getting up. I remember when Gwen from Mother Compost, who we've talked about a couple of times, is getting started, she asked me, she was asking kind of similar questions. And I think one thing I told her was like, you gotta have to just trust that it's going to work, and you have to kind of go out there on the tightrope without a safety net and just make sure you don't fall.
Just have faith.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Tim. Appreciate the interview, and good luck to Bennett Compost.
If you enjoy the Community Composting Podcast and want to support future episodes, please follow the link in the episode show notes to give a small monthly reoccurring donation, even if it's $5 to $10 a month. We'll continue to come out with killer content to keep the grassroots movement rolling.